the millennials and this new generation of individuals and students really are focused on giving back, and it's not so important to them necessarily the monetary return, but rather the satisfaction that they get. It's really important that the organizations that they are working for do have that civic mindedness, and I think that's going to be a very powerful thing in the future.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Beyond High Street, or welcome to Beyond High Street. If this is the first time listening in, really appreciate it. We've spent a lot of time the last few months talking to CEOs and CMOs. This conversation was a treat, a little bit different. Yes, Dave Nicewander is a CEO, but he's the CEO of World Bicycle Relief. He's gone from the corporate and investment banking world to the civic and community bicycle world. The organization's given something like 400,000 bikes out to needy individuals in Africa. And it talks a great story about, yes, a bike is for transportation, but it's also the conduit for education and healthcare and just to help the family out. Really, really important. And it's I think that community and civic mindset is where students and young adults think every day. They actually could teach me and the older generation a few things about that too. We started our conversation talking night one in Africa.
Totally unexpected. I'd never spent, I was lucky enough to do the Luxembourg experience actually at Miami University for a semester. But other than that, I'd never lived abroad and certainly never lived in the developing world. And those first 3 months in Africa, and I was living in Lusaka, Zambia, it was pretty funny. I would tell my friends and family and colleagues, I said, well, Africa won today, because some days just trying to get your electricity, your water, sort out what's going on, and figure out where you need to get your driver's license is almost an overwhelming task. And coming from where I was coming from, which was, you know, type A investment banking background, to realize that sometimes you have to slow down and that you're not going to change everything on day one, but you have to, you know, keep fighting the good fight where you can. Sometimes it was just accomplishing one thing in one day was a success, and so that's what I remember from those early days, and still remember that, to take a deep breath and hold things loosely as it relates to what's important and what's not important.
What was the, as you're talking about just electricity and water, what was technology like there?
It's surprisingly modern. The challenge in Lusaka is that, it's a city now of about 3 million people and probably built with the infrastructure of 150,000 people. And so water and electricity, the infrastructure was a little bit challenging. Now, that being said, they were, as I was leaving, they're laying, fiber, optic fiber for the internet, and then they're doing lots of different things, and an amazing investment going in there as far as improving that infrastructure. USAID is funding a huge water improvement plan for water and sanitation. So it's the developing world, and so you have pockets where you can walk into a hotel and you are in the very lovely surroundings that any boutique hotel would be envious of. And then next door is a slum and people that don't have clean water and sanitation. So it's just that disparity that sometimes is difficult to sort of reconcile.
And was there a life moment that made you jump from FBR, capital markets in DC, to the organization and go to Africa? Or were just always civic and community minded and it was the right time?
I think probably, David, is probably more the right time. I think that at that point, I was approaching 37 years old, and I'd been 15 years an investment banker and enjoying that quite a quite a lot and found success there and found satisfaction there. But it was starting to be a diminishing return as far as the feeling of success and chasing the almighty dollar, which was sort of that barometer of success, was less and less fulfilling. And so sort of thinking through, well, what is going to be the next chapter in my life and what are the things that I can do that can add value and be interesting, get one life to live. How are you going to make it interesting? And it was really a random circumstance. I met through friends of friends. I met F.K. Day, who's the co-founder of World Bicycle Leaf, on a safari in Kenya. I got to be friends with him and sort of seeing, you know, what he was doing was really inspired. He himself was an entrepreneur, a capitalist, had built up a very successful bicycle company with his brother, and was looking to give back. And so I traveled with him to Zambia, and within 6 weeks, I was living there. And went on a one-year sabbatical for my investment bank that's now gone on to just about 11 years.
That's incredible. And so that was the World Bicycle Relief. That was the organization.
That's correct. World Bicycle Relief, exactly.
And is there a singular mission or objective of that organization?
Sure. I mean, World Bicycle Leaf is about how to mobilize people in the developing world to create access to healthcare, to education, economic opportunities, and finding that the simple, sustainable, quality bicycle is a really important tool for people to get that access. And the co-founder, F.K. Day, coming from the bicycle industry, has been able to work through and develop a very strong bicycle that's an appropriate tool to help people help themselves. And that's what I think resonates most with me, is that, you know, a bicycle is just a tool. And unless it's being used by the end user, it's somewhat useless, but it can create open worlds. It can connect people to healthcare and education and economic opportunities. I mean, think about the young girl that has to travel 5, 6, 7 miles one way to get to school by walking. And not only is she tired, but there's also the issue of safety. And when she's walking those long distances, and quite frankly, you know, you're racing the sun in the developing world. When your option is walking, you really are racing the sun.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, it's a nuance, but so important in reading how, and you mentioned it, the bikes are built for the environment that you're in, because it's not Arlington, Virginia, where I live, and everything's paved and things are flat and just not just the safety you're talking about, but I imagine it's dirt and rocks and hills and terrain that most don't see.
Yeah, that's how we developed what we call the Buffalo Bicycle, and the tagline is built for big loads on tough roads. And there's a lot of product development and research and really connecting the end user up through the supply chain to the component manufacturers. And that's never been done before. And that's sort of exciting to me. And I think that's the differentiation. It'd be one thing if we were just, you know, there's good programs out there that people donate bicycles in the States and they ship them off to Africa and they feel good about that. But unfortunately, those bicycles just fall apart. I mean, they're probably not in the best of shape when they get shipped over, certainly not really in the best of shape when they arrive. And then there's no installed base of spare parts or technology that's not appropriate, hardware that's not appropriate for the conditions that we're talking about. So really thinking from the bottom up on, you know, how do you create an appropriate bicycle technology with an installed base of spare parts and training of field mechanics, or thinking holistically about the ecosystem where we operate to create mobilized communities.
That's great. We actually have another Miami colleague, Andrew Goodwillie, who runs a program in Denver called Trips for Kids Denver, which is similar, but empowering at-risk and disadvantaged youth using bicycles. And I think they put many of these kids in kind of teamwork-type environments and take them out on trips. So the idea of it spreads everywhere from the Miamians, which is awesome.
That's fantastic. Great.
And so the idea just of community and civic-minded, I mean, I think we all talk about that every day just in 2018. Go back to like a, if you were in college or high school, did you have that thought? Were you thinking added value or giving back to society, or it really came later after the success at FBR? Because I'm thinking about the kids in Oxford now, or just right out of school. I imagine they think about it more than we probably did 20 years ago.
I think that's probably right. I mean, I'm catching up on almost 30 years out of Oxford, and I think, you know, I was a member of Zeta Beta Tau, and we certainly did civic minded or charitable things back then through the Greek system. But what I really appreciate in seeing in my work today, and some of the consultants and volunteers that we have come over, the millennials and this new generation of individuals and students really are focused on giving back, and it's not so important to them necessarily the monetary return, but rather the satisfaction that they get. And it's really important that the organizations that they are working for do have that civic mindedness, and I think that's going to be a very powerful thing in the future and necessary.
Yeah, and important for corporations and companies to understand that, just from getting employees and an employee retention perspective in the future.
Absolutely, absolutely, and we see that a lot.
What else do you remember? And you say 30 years. I think we're about the same age. So maybe I was just trying to be nice to both of us when I said 20 years. What else do you remember from those days in Oxford?
I mean, Oxford was fantastic, right? I mean, it's sort of this amazing, beautiful, a little bit of a bubble, but an amazing, protective place to learn and to explore, you know, your intellectual curiosities. There was a sense of safety that was there. There was the, you know, it was the quintessential red brick academic college campus. And the fact that the, you know, Oxford itself was sort of lent itself to be a college town and walk up street to High Street and just spend, it was easy access. And it was idyllic. I think, you know, it gives you that base, that sense of confidence to go out there. You know, and as I mentioned, I was fortunate to do the Luxembourg program for a semester my junior year. And that really, I think of anything from my university experience, really opened my eyes to the broader world and be able to, you know, at a later point in time, have the confidence to travel abroad and to think about that I could live abroad and certainly live in Africa.
When I was in school, I felt so attached to Oxford that I never went to Lux. I thought to myself, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss so much if I was gone for 4 months. But every single person that I've talked to that went to Lux has said it was an unbelievable experience. The culture, the learning, the friends they met on that trip that they've continued with. So I missed out on that one.
I don't know. It's a tough call. I mean, Oxford is pretty fantastic, but that experience, if I look back on my college experience, that probably was the most rewarding and the thing that I look back on most fondly.
Some of our friends from college, Kim and Jeff Stadenko, I was looking on Facebook this weekend. Their daughters now swim in high school, and there was a meet on campus, and they had posted something like, all right, we're going out to lunch with the daughters, where should we go? And I think the comments they had on Facebook are probably more than anything that they would normally post. I mean, it's special for all of us.
Absolutely.
Were you in clubs at school, or in the fraternity life, which I lived to, and just school and having fun is a little bit all-encompassing. But any other clubs or things that you did that helped prepare for FBR, or just did the college life?
I think it was mainly the college life. I mean, fraternity life was an important part, certainly in my sophomore year. Junior year was, as I mentioned, halfway in Lux and then coming back. You know, I think, yeah, that was sort of more encompassing with that. I wasn't involved with any of the student government or anything like that.
And Chicago's home, which to me is kind of the secondary city of Miami. Are you running into buddies back from school, or do you see Miamians just out in the workplace? on a regular?
I did. Yeah, no, actually, I had this weekend. I had dinner with a great friend who was my freshman RA at Reed Hall, and has been a lifelong friend. So he and his wife were in town downtown from the Burbs, and we got together on Saturday.
And how did you end up at FBR? Was FBR at a job fair in Miami, or had you interned? And what was that connection?
Yeah, no, I graduated in 92, which wasn't a great time in the job market. Found a job in an investment banking boutique in Columbus, Ohio. And I was working there for 3 years, and then there was an affiliation with FBR in this firm in Columbus that was a boutique, and then transferred over there. I guess that was back in 96. Is when I moved to DC and joined FBR.
And what's next for World Bicycle Relief? Where do you see the organization in, call it, 5 years?
Yeah. Well, right now we're just about ready to approach over 400,000 bicycles in the developing world.
Wow.
And we've set up a pretty dynamic model where we have the not-for-profit, and it owns a 100% a for-profit subsidiary called Buffalo Bicycles Limited. And so right now, as we look at those 400,000 bicycles, about half of the bicycles are funded philanthropically through donations, generous supporters in the U.S., the U.K., Germany, Canada, just opened up in Australia, our fundraising offices, and then half of them are sold in countries where we operate. And we operate currently in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Malawi, Kenya. We're doing programs in Ghana and Colombia. And so we're selling bicycles mainly to other nonprofit organizations like UNICEF, Food and Agricultural Organization, CARE, Catholic Relief Services, those type of folks. So the vision is, I mean, to continue to do what we do, and we should be doing millions of bicycles into the developing world. The need is that great, and I think we have the right value proposition and seeing the impact. A really important part of what we do is to quantify that impact. So we invest a lot into monitoring and evaluation that gives us the information to improve our programs, improve our bicycles, but also shows the impact of what a bicycle can do to improve access to education, improve access to healthcare, and to markets and economic opportunities.
Are there other companies that you see personally, like Tom's or others, that have done a really nice job of blending a for-profit and a nonprofit together?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a growing marketplace, and I think Tom's is one way to sort of look at buy one and give one. And I think they've had some logistical challenges, still doing a lot of good things. I think a lot of people are trying to figure this out. Actually, I'm going to be in D.C. in July speaking on a panel, running a panel that talks about how to sort of put the social enterprise in for not-for-profits. And with that combination, I think it really, we're not seeing a lot of them, but we're seeing more and more. And I think people realize they want to think about development. They want to think about charity, traditional charity, in a different way. And thinking about, if I'm creating a sustainable machine that then can do more, and I'm making an investment, that's somewhat more attractive than someone that says, well, I need a donation this year and next year and the following years. Really investing more. And one of the things I look at as far as measuring the success of our organization is the infrastructure that we're creating. It is the bicycle industry. We have over 150 people on payroll, and these are assemblers and mechanics, and these are trainers and warehouse managers. And so we're creating jobs, and we're training people for jobs. And that's the way that I think development needs to move towards.
As you think of your, I'm going to still go back to 20 plus years, even though I know you're fighting on the 30. As you think back on that history post college, and you think of the corporate mindset to more of the community social enterprise mindset, what's the advice, or what's a tip you have for the 22-year-old coming out of school, as they're going to be working in some way for the next 30 or 40 years, to balance those two?
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. And I think that it's one of those things that the millennials do have a good eye on. They do have a good eye on as it relates to, there's ways for me to have a career and also do good things. And I think that's what we're putting our minds to as well. I mean, FK, who started up a bike company, myself with investment banking, how can we take our skills and apply it to the developing world? It's a wonderfully rewarding career, but you can also be successful. You can build a business out of it. There's opportunities to be entrepreneurial in those marketplaces. So putting that kind of skills, putting that kind of talent into, you know, really trying to achieve success and against some of the bigger challenges that we're facing as a world.
Wow. I loved that comment about just getting one win a day. If we could all slow down and think about that, one win a day. What an important life lesson from being a kindergartner through probably being a grandparent, even going from home to work. One win a day. I love that. If you want to support what Dave is doing, check out worldbicyclerelief.com. Incredible organization. Really appreciate everyone listening. Thanks, guys. Have a great week. See you at Skipper's.